Good morning, sir. Before we get started, may we have your name, sir?
Yes, Craig Fluin.
Okay, sir, if you could hold on for one moment, I believe that the Honorable Mr. Johnson will be conducting your hearing. Just one moment, let me pass this sheet to him. Mr. Johnson, the Honorable Mr. Johnson will be conducting your hearing, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sir, for the record, could you just state your name and your ABC number for us for the record?
Yes, Craig Fluin, and my number is 039694.
Okay, Mr. Fluin, I'm going to introduce you to the board that's going to be conducting your hearing today, sir. To my far right is the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. Coming down next to her is the Honorable Luis Quinones. In the middle, sir, you have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. He is your board chair. Next to me, to my left, is the Honorable Mr. Neal, sir. And my name is Michael Johnson, sir. I'm going to be acting as your panel chair this morning, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to go over some information, and then I'll be coming back to you, Mr. Fluin. You are currently before the Arizona Board of Clemency, sir. You are here for an absolute discharge, home arrest, or regular parole. Is that right, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, sir. You are currently serving a sentence for 15 years to life. You became parole eligible on that sentence for March 10th of 1993, sir. You had a previous sentence that has expired that was for burglary. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and you're serving two concurrent life sentences, 15 years to life sentence right now. Both of those sentences are for a burglary. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Sir, according to your inmate progress report, it says that you're currently applying for entrance to the Reborn Assistance Program. The staff is trying to schedule you a telephonic interview prior to this hearing. If the placement does not accept him, you will pursue assistance from the Veterans Center Air Force. As you retire from the Air Force, sir?
No, I just honorable discharge. Okay. For service.
Okay, so it also says that you have resources outside of prison, established checking and saving account, and you also qualify for veteran benefit regarding your medical issue. You will also be receiving family support from your sister, Kathy Hall?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so it says that your last disciplinary action was in 2013 was disobeying a verbal, and that was a minor violation at that time?
Yes.
So, according to your Ames report, sir, I'm looking at in February of 15, there was a disrupting count, but you were found not guilty on that one. And then at 14, there was a theft of possession, and that one was actually dismissed.
Yes.
Sir,
I don't remember it.
Sir?
I don't remember a lot of those when they dismissed.
Okay. Okay,
sir,
going over, you've been before the parole board several times. I'm going to go over what I hope that I figured out correctly. On your parole, sir, you came before the parole board in 1988 and you were denied it. Then in 1992, you came to the parole board for parole, same as you are now, home arrest or absolute discharge, and then you were denied at that time, sir. Then in looks like 1993, you were granted home arrest. Is that right, sir?
Yes, that's well. I wasn't at the board in 88 because it was 92, and that was because I believe under the law they take you 6 months early. There was a 6 month early kick out at that time, but I wasn't eligible for that because I had to do the minimum. That's why I was denied that first hearing. because I had to do the 15 calendar years before I could become eligible.
Okay. All right, sir. So it looks like, according to the notes that I wrote down here, that you were granted regular parole in November of 1993. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then in December of 1997, you were revoked.
Yes.
Can you tell the board why you were revoked at that time, sir?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It goes back to some years that I've been trying to explain to the board. At that time, in 1995, I had sustained an industrial injury on my job, and I had been going through the surgeries, and that's something that I had never experienced. And everything was going well. It was just that the time took a toll on my mind that I had not understood. And, you know, because of the narcotics that I had been placed on and going through depression, which I didn't even know I was going through depression, that's when I, after trying to get into school and trying to get a new career going, I began to use drugs. And not realizing that I had become addicted at that time, and not understanding what was going on, I came back, and that's what led to the violation.
Okay.
It wasn't nothing to do with anything else. I made an error in understanding what was going on in my life. I went from a $1,500 a week take home pay to a $1,500 a month. And I'm stressed. I didn't know how to deal with it. And my mistake in not seeking out somebody to figure out what was going on, especially due to the fact that I had good employment, but this injury, I still haven't closed the claim on it. And this has been a disruption to me.
Okay. Well, sir, you were revoked in 1997. After you were revoked in 1997, you came up for a hearing several times in which you were denied. However, in October of 01, you were granted regular parole again, sir. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you were granted parole in October of 01, and then in July of 02, you were again revoked. Is that right?
Yes.
So, sir, why were you revoked that time?
I can't say that it wasn't the same, but in reality it was. When I came back into the institution, I thought that I had corrected areas that I was lacking in. I have been the program as far as my drug addiction. But something else happened that really, really affected me. And once again, I have never been through that situation again. And during that period of time, both my mother and my father passed away. And what really got me, and I don't think you'll understand this, was when my sister called the institution and told me my mother was in the hospital. She told me that she was going to be all right, but the only thing I could hear over the phone was my mother's voice screaming in pain and things like that. Well, 30 minutes after my sister hung up, I was called back, and that was the last voice that I heard. My mother had passed away, and I didn't, once again, these things that affect the mind. I'm glad I'm a strong individual. I don't know about depression. I don't know about what makes a person's, you know, emotions turn. And my mom's always been there for me. And for her not to be there for me, you know, at that time, once again, when I was released, I'm lost. You know, I'm actually lost. And I just didn't know how to get a handle on who I was, what I was doing. All I knew was that there was some pain inside my mind, and for 2 years I'm steady hearing these voices in my head. People think, you know, you're crazy when you hear voices, But all I hear is my mother's voice ringing in my head, you know, and if she's not there.
Okay.
And that hurt, yeah.
All right. So after you were revoked in 02, I think you had a couple more hearings that were denied, and then it looks like you were granted random parole again in 04, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, you were granted parole in March of 04, then in July of 04, 2004, you were again revoked, is that right?
Yes.
So what happened that time, sir?
Well, now I'm getting it together. When it was revoked at that time, I actually took responsibility. You know, as things began to change, I knew that if I did not get something else to change my life, and this is the part that started playing a change in my life, there was something missing in my life. It had nothing to do with money. It had nothing to do with, you know, having family. There was something missing inside me. And that's something that I didn't understand at the time, based on the life that I had lived prior to this. But I had made a decision at that time, and that it, what was missing in my life and was God. I'm gonna be honest with you, and you know, I have to speak out on this. I came in and I said, I have this knowledge, I have abilities, I'm healthy, I'm not, you know, but something's missing in my life, and I'm using other things to now, since mom and dad's not there, grandmas and grandfathers are not there, aunts and uncles have passed away that I'm used to being around. I'm trying to find something to replace what's inside me, what's missing. And when I chose the drug situation at that time, I said that wasn't working, you know. And I sat with somebody when I came back in the institution, and I said to him that I apologized to the board, and I said, I gotta go dig into me. I got to find out what's in me. You know, everybody's telling me that I have this ability, I have this ability, but not being able to express what's inside me in a manner that I do now, I'm able to now. I said, when I took that, made that decision, I was sitting in a cell, you know, in the middle of summertime here in the prison. And I just got down on my knees, and that was it. But what I didn't realize when I made that decision, it was going to get more difficult. It was going to get more difficult, but I had not yet learned how to deal with what was to come. Because when I came back on the yard, and after many years of practicing Islam and converting to Christianity, the first thing that happened to me, I was beat up real bad. You know, because I made this decision to get out of something. Well, I accepted that and I didn't turn back. That was my first instance of the difficulties that was going to come, because my whole life was going to steady come back at me.
Okay. Okay.
So at that time, that's what began.
Okay, so you were revoked in July of 2004 and you went back to prison. And then less than a year later, sir, it looks like in January of 05, you were again granted parole. Is that right?
I'm sure
it's going through here. Then you were granted random parole in January of 05. Then you were revoked again in July of 06. Is that correct?
Yes.
So what, I mean, so you, that's your fourth time being out on parole. Prior to being revoked, what is it that's causing you to keep going back to prison, sir?
Well, at that time in 06, I'm still on that change journey, and as far as what's in my heart, and I to explain it in a way that I hope, and you know, I can only hope you'll understand. You know, I know now and understand that's the part of this journey with Christ that I was on. Things were going to get difficult for me. And it's going to always be difficult for me as long as I'm walking in this path. It's not an easy path to walk. And trying to adjust from an old way of thinking, an old way of understanding people and living in fear, yeah, I still fell into the things. What I tell people now is, before Christ, I was a good servant for Satan. That's why I can put it. And he wanted me back, and you know, and all these temptations and things like that are out there in that world outside of this prison. They're at a degree where when they come at you hard. Mm-hmm. And if you're not solid in your faith, you're not going to make it.
Okay. So, sir, in 06, when you were revoked, after you went back to prison, you were in prison for a number of years after that. And then it looks like in October of 2013, you were given parole again, sir.
Yes.
After several years, you were given numerous years. It looks like after 7 years, you were granted parole again. And then in October of 13, and then looks like in February of 2015, sir, after being granted, this would have been your fifth time having parole. After being granted parole again on the fifth time, you were revoked again in February.
Okay, well, let's go back to 2013. 2013 should be a non-violation. Mm-hmm. Because that should not have, I was reinstated on that issue because there was a confrontation that was formulated against me. Mm-hmm. That I had proven was a lie, and it was proven to this board. And the board, after 15 months, re-released me back to my parole, which it was a non-reinstated. I was reinstated after 15 months.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that, because it looks like in February 2015, you was revoked, and March of 2015, there was a modification that was granted to you in March of 15. So that's the board gave you a modification and let you back out. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So
after they did that, it looks like this was in March of 2015 that they granted you a modification, which would have been your sixth time, and then that was revoked in December of 2015. Is that correct? Which is why you haven't been out since December of 2015 on this last revocation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, like I said, I went back out in 2015. They released me after 15 months for the 2013 violation. Yeah, that's right. And yes, they did re-release me. And once again, I came back. And this time, when I came back in 2015, I was never given an opportunity to explain my situation, because everyone automatically assumes, because of my previous violations, that they are forming a pattern, okay? And that wasn't the case, so I never even got an opportunity to speak on that matter of why I'm here. All I know is people make accusations. No one is willing to come and testify to this board with facts, but because I am not in the position to express what happens at these halfway houses that I was in, that I was trying to get out of, I'm not. And I, once again, it had nothing to do with with drugs. It had nothing to do with me reoffending. What it had to do with was the fact that if I try to get away from people. I know that being around people who want to continue to do wrong is not for me. And if I tell you that I can't deal with you, I don't want to deal with you in these halfway houses, I'm a problem. Okay? The parole officers said that I had to stay in the halfway houses according to the parole board, that's what they designated, and I didn't believe that, and they said they kept going to you, and asking you, allowing me to get out of the halfway houses after 90 days. Here it is, 4 months. I'm going through surgeries. I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do. Everything and beyond. But I get into another argument with another person at the halfway house, and I'm put back in prison with, just based on an argument. No violence, no hands, no threatening, no killing, no nothing. Just an argument.
Okay.
But I'm put back in prison.
Okay, sir. So I see that, Mr. Farland, that you do have, we have your parole resume that you wrote out, and what you have taken some classes, you got your GED, you've taken college classes, you have some certificates and completions of different programs right there, you self-improvement. You do have really done some things while you've been incarcerated, sir, over a period of time to better yourself. I'm looking at an Ames report, however, and this could be a little bit different. I know that you have taken some recent classes according to the resume, but I do want to go over, sir, I'm going to go with the original information or the original crime that got you in here. I'm just going to read some information from the pre-sentence investigation report that we have access to, okay? Then I'm going to come back to you, sir, and let you comment on it and tell this boy in all words what was going on with you during that period of time, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So according to the report, it says that shortly after midnight on May 10th, 1978, an 8-year-old girl was sleeping alone in a bedroom at West Phoenix home. Says that when you reportedly forced entry into the home for the purpose of committing a burglary, you entered the young girl's room, awakened her by turning the light on, almost immediately placed a sock over her eyes so that she could not see him. She was warned not to make any noises or she would get hurt. Says that you then reportedly removed all the victim's clothing while the girl was lying on the bed. She was blindfolded, that you penetrated her rectum to 2 inches with an erect penis. You then moved the victim to the living room where you first the girl and performed fellatio on him. After a short time, you reportedly rubbed lotion on your penis, the private parts of the girl, including her vagina, in the rectum area. Then you forced the girl to bend over from the waist again and inserted your penis into her rectum while having anal intercourse with the victim. In that fashion, then you reportedly inserted your penis into her rectum and completed the act of sodomy. For a period of time, the girl was instructed to sit on the couch while the defendants rummaged through the house. And then, sir, it says that there's another related incident that says that at approximately at 1:20 in the morning, a young man and his girlfriend were sitting in their living room a short distance from where the girl had been assaulted in her home and burglarized. A couple heard a sound like something dropping from the residence behind theirs. The man went to the rear of the house, where he observed an individual climbing into the window.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Johnson, excuse me. They had me sitting outside for a while, but I have to use the restroom real bad.
Okay.
Is it possible I can take it? Yeah.
All right. Could you put your CO3 on the phone, sir?
Okay, just a minute.
What he said, he said he had to go to use the restroom.
Okay.
So we'll just wait on
that. Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay, no problem. That happens. We have to take a break sometime and do the same thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. He needed to go. He barely made it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, no problem, sir. Well, that happens. We have to sometimes take a break and go ourselves, sir, so that's certainly something that we can understand. Okay, sir, so I'm going to go back. So after this house, I said approximately 1:20 that same morning, a couple of houses down, they heard someone, a noise outside. The next door neighbor saw someone going into the a window of a house. He notified the police. Police came out. They brought out two dogs that subsequently they sent into the house at that time. About a minute later, the officers entered the house where they discovered you reaching for a gun. According to the officers, at that time you were arrested. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, sir. And so basically, according to the information that we have, this information could have changed, but according to the information that we have, that you admitted to doing the burglary where you were arrested inside the house, but you denied the sexual assault on the 8-year-old girl, and you have stood fast by that, sir. Is that still the case?
Yes, it is, sir.
Okay, and according to the information that we have, that says that at least one piece of jewelry found on you have been taken from the burglary previously where the, in which time the girl had been sexually assaulted. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so. So, sir, what was going on with you at that point in time in your life when you were out and these alleged incidents all occurred?
A lot of confusion in my life. Like I said, I was continue to stand fast on my innocence of those sexual assault charges. I tried to prove when they said the jury. I tried to prove that where it was mine and. Everything just am I thinking at that period of time I'm lost. Some things that happened to me prior to that that really had me at the point where as I explained to the previous board in 93 when I was 14 years old I was shot by a Chicago police officer. Which that's what led my family moving to Arizona. I subsequently, and whether you want to believe this or not, and it's true, at the time prior to coming here, I had received a draft card. And that's how I got into the military. I went in the military 1 month before my 15th birthday. And after serving 2 years on a deferred discharge, you know, I took a deferment on my discharge because it was coming down. They were just down at the Vietnam War. I'm still underage at that point. I still had some discipline problems. I still had some focus problems in my life. But at that time, as I explained, if I would have been able to get the person at the burglary where I was caught to come in and testify, there would have been a whole totally different light on what was happening at that time. Okay, and like I said, I admitted to that. I knew I made a mistake and made an error in doing what I did at that time. But after spending close to 11 months in the county jail and not really knowing what was happening, not knowing and having I put my trust in my lawyer. I said I wasn't guilty. Okay? I put it in his hands to deal with. I felt that there was no more to say about it at that time. When he came back and said, well, they had two hairs, but they didn't match. They didn't match mine. When they had all this, you know, information, the clothes that I had on didn't match me. I mean, here it is, you know, nothing that I had on matched what these people, what was claimed in the police report by everybody, that this is who they saw. Okay, and only thing I can say was, okay, when the plea agreement came, and this is what I'm told, you know, back on fear, you know, they're gonna lock me up forever. You know, if you don't take this plea agreement, and that's how that went.
Okay.
I tried to reverse and take this plea back, because I wanted to prove myself in trial. But none of that is spoken of here in any of these hearings or anything like that, that I attempted to take the plea bargain back because I felt there was something wrong. And when my mother came and talked to me, she said, if you didn't do it, why'd you plead? I said, well, this man threatened me with 100 years, Mama. What am I going to do? Okay, I don't know.
Okay.
But I was not allowed to take that plea agreement back. And I wasn't taking it back on the assumption that, oh, I'm going to get less time or what have you. I said I wasn't guilty, and pleading guilty, even though they said these charges would be dismissed, they'll never be used again in another proceeding, I'm still guilty. But I didn't have an opportunity. The judge would not allow me to have my day in a trial, which I have requested. So this is where I'm at as far as that. But like I said, you know, Mr. Johnson, where my thinking was, once again, I know where it was. It was not in the way that it is today.
Okay.
I don't think like I do today, yesterday, and that's, I have no, and I've been out, I've proven that by being released on the times that I've had, and all the people that are complaining about me being back in this institution are ex-convicts. You know, those are the ones who've made these accusations that have gotten me back, put back in this institution. And just like I tell them today, if you're not walking the path and I'm walking, I don't have time for you.
Okay. So let me ask you one more thing before I go to the board to see if the board has any additional questions. At the time that you were arrested and this allegedly incident occurred, according to the information that I have, that you were on probation for assault with a deadly weapon. Is that right, either on probation or parole?
No. No. I've only got 3 convictions in my life, and all 3 were burglaries. I have no other convictions.
Okay, so you were you on probation at the time this offense occurred?
Yes.
Okay, all right. All right, Mr. Palmer, I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions, sir.
Mr. Johnson, thank you. So, Mr. Florman, you made a statement earlier, and maybe I misheard you, but you said something like, in these halfway houses, it's a problem. And when we were talking about a parole revocation, I think. Did I hear you correctly, and what would you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is, the last halfway house that I was in that caused a revocation that reinstated me, I'll go back to that one. Some of these places, I recently talked to some parole supervisors who came down to a town hall meeting down at the Tucson complex, and they were a lot of guys expressed this to these parole officers. There's problems in these halfway houses, okay? And when, you know, you have people coming in that don't care to do right, they're forced on other guys who are doing right. Take, for instance, I was put in a bad situation at the halfway house I was in that caused this revocation. They were having a big party in the house. I got to get up and go to work, okay? The manager's there. They got women in the house, went through the bathroom. And just like I had to do now, I had to go to the bathroom. Well, me and the guy got into a disagreement right then. But because me being the only African American in the house, I was called the N-word. I walked away. I totally walked away because it was in the middle of the night. I went back to my room. I got up the very next morning and went somewhere else because, once again, I had to go to work. I came back to the residence, and all of a sudden we get into a big argument. I need to go to work and come back home at 3 o'clock in the morning from work. I'm locked out, saying, he said, I threatened him. Well, I couldn't explain, and I tried to explain at that hearing, this is what's going on in these halfway houses. If I don't want to be a part of it, don't make me a part of it. I will stay away from it. Once again, the last halfway house I was in, there was so much going on. I'm paying $525 a month rent, okay, for a one bedroom, doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing. And it's documented in my report. I'm going to AA meetings that the board didn't even ask me to go. Okay, I'm going to PTS counseling at the VA that the board did not ask me to go. Okay, I don't have time to deal with certain people who are not going, dealing with a certain family. I'm going to church 2 or 3 times a week. And the problem is, the halfway houses, they are a problem sometimes. They are. And nobody, most guys are starting to express that to the board. They're expressing it to these parole officers and everything else. This is the only way that we have in getting out for those who don't have a place. Okay? I chose the halfway houses because, like I said, I have my own finances. I don't want my family taking responsibility for my stupidity. And I didn't mind being in a halfway house because that right there would give me, it would show my parole officer, and it would show this board, when I walk out of here, my criminal days are over. Okay? But, once again, like I do in this institution, I don't deal with people who want to continue to do stupidity. And some of these people are there. I've had money stolen from me. I've had property stolen from me. But I didn't go off on a tangent and start wanting to beat up everybody or like they would in prison. I just said, okay, that's part of the way it goes. Okay, I'll accept that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. Okay. I just have one other question for you. I misheard this too, but you mentioned at one point you were practicing Islam, but you also converted to Christianity. Yet the reports we have show you back in, I think, like 1978 or so, being Christian. So when were you practicing Islam?
I had started practicing Islam back in 1981.
Okay, so that was correct in the report then. But it sounds like your faith is very important to you.
Now it is, because now I have, along with all the education that was mentioned that I got in this prison, that was one of the things that I thought would make, you know, I said, I'm healthy, I've got knowledge. I walked out of this institution. I worked for the same company. In fact, once again, as far as this industrial entry, it's the same company that's paying me now. If I were to get out of here and get discharged, and this is 15, 20 years later, I'd go right back to work for that company. Okay? And that was what I wanted to do. Okay? See? And that's where I was thinking when I leave here. If I were to leave here today, I'm going straight to the doctor and say, Doctor, you got it. We got to cure this injury, because I cannot go back to work until he says I'm clearing you for work.
Okay, thank you.
It would be illegal for me to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Zoran. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Okay. So board have any sir? The board has no additional questions at this time. So we're about to go into discussion. During the discussion, we'll make a determination whether we revoke or reinstate you. Grant you parole or deny your parole at this time, sir. Prior to the board going into discussion, I want to give you the opportunity to see if there's anything else you'd like to tell the board, and ask you to please not repeat yourself, sir.
Yes, sir. Once again, I'm always grateful you can have a hearing, you know, because there are people here that don't get this opportunity. Ladies and gentlemen, I walk out of here with one thing in mind, not to violate the law. And as long as I know when I walk out of here with that in mind, and I've done that and I've proven that, but other things that I have in mind, I do have a plan. and I've always put that before the parole board, I've always put that before my parole officers. When I get out, I gotta go to work. I normally have a job within 2 or 3 days after I'm released, okay? Once again, like I said, I have my own finances. I've saved money, I've earned money, so I don't have to be a burden on anyone. And when I do walk out of here, I look at giving back, okay? I have to give back because that's the type of person I've become, okay? That's what's in my heart now. And doing service work, doing all these things, that's what I want to do. I look at a lot of people, and I'm not judging myself based on what other people do or how other people act. My only concern is how I act, okay? And I know every day of my life, I could be on parole or off parole, it wouldn't make any difference. I still have to prove myself as a person who is worthy to live out in this world, okay? And it's a lot going on out there. I listen to the news, and sometimes, you know, it makes me say, you know what? I'm better off in this prison because I don't have to worry about somebody wanting to drive a car down and mow me down because I'm walking down the street with my girlfriend. You know, these type of things just going on out there in that world. But once again, I got my faith, and that's important to me. This is what I love. This is who I love and what I'm going after. You know, I want to further my studies in my walk with Christ. I was involved with the ministry out there. The church I was going to in East Mason, it was great. That made me happy. Nothing else would make me more happier than serving God the way I'm serving Him today. And like I said, I count myself as being blessed to have this opportunity to come before this board, to be able to withstand all the barrages that's been coming at me over the last 2 years. Since I've been in this institution, I've been beat up twice. I've had $200 worth of property stolen from me by the inmates, and I'm still going on. I'm not letting that hold me back. This is how it is in this place, and this is what I have to overcome. And I believe I've done that. And that's based on my disciplinary. There's staff here that if they could write letters on my behalf, they would. But I just want you guys to know that I have not. It's not my heart anymore. When I gave up, I gave up. You know, because I've seen too much, I've heard too much, and what I've seen, for me to be a part of that in my past, yeah, I'm hurt by it. I apologize so sincerely at my very first parole hearing. Because the people that came down and some of the board members at that time knew some of my family. And I was ashamed to have to sit in front of board members that knew my family and things like that and tell them how stupid I was, you know, and not coming from that type of family background. But once again, I overcame that in this institution. And I've stayed away from a lot of things for that purpose. I said, I'm going to go get my education. I'm going to program. I'm going to talk to people about what I did wrong. And I'm going to overcome this. And this board has helped me come over a lot of things. I wish some of my parole officers would speak up on my behalf because they stayed in contact with so much of what I was doing. And when I was having problems, I called them. Hey, look, this is what's going on. If I didn't have everything was cool, I'd still call them. I had a slab leak at a woman's house one night. I was coming home from work when I worked for a plumbing company. And I had to be with my parole officers that day. Well, the boss asked me, would I take care of it? I said, hey, he knew I had to be at my parole officer. So I called my parole officer from this woman's house. And he called her back.
and informed her that I was on parole. He said, he's in the middle of my living room floor trying to stop my stop leaking my house. I stayed in this house until 11 o'clock that night because I said I was going to have this woman and her family's water on back before I left that house. And I did that. And that right there was showing him that I'm out here wanting to be productive for people. I'm not taking the attitude of prison life out of this place. I cut it off. I've cut this attitude off. And with that, you know, I can only hope and I pray that you allow me to go back out and continue showing that I'm not a problem in this world. I will never again be a problem. Thank you, man. Thank you, guys.
All right. Mr. Fulham. The board's going to go into discussion. While the board's going into discussion, sir, I'm going to ask you to remain on the phone while the board's in discussion. However, I'm going to also ask you to remain silent while the board's in discussion. The mayor's here, though, we're talking to you, but we're only going to be talking amongst ourselves, sir, at this time. And then when the board makes its decision, we will get back to you, and you'll be able to hear, as the board is having that discussion and deliberating, you'll be able to hear that as this conversation is taking place. The board is now going into our discussion.
Okay.
In this case, Mr. Fulham really appears to have taken several classes, getting himself together. He has talked about and showed the classes that he had. appears to be well knowledgeable, able to express himself as he's talking and as he's continuing to talk to this board. However, and looking at the report and everything that's going on in itself, at the time that this incident occurred, he was on probation. He has had some prior criminal history. He was arrested during another burglary within an hour or so after this incident occurred with the 8-year-old female. He was in the same area where it happened. He was doing a burglary at the time that it occurred. Although he did take a plea agreement, and he talks about his plea agreement, but the plea agreement did, as a result of the plea agreement, drop the sodomy felony charge, and also the rape, first degree, and felony, and the lewd, the lascivious acts upon or with a child under the age of 15 years old. However, at the time that he was arrested, he did have at least one piece of jewelry on him that came from the victim's house, who was the 8-year-old victim. It just appears that throughout and listening to Mr. Fulham talk, he's been out on parole six times. He was granted parole six times. Each of those times he was revoked. He's currently back in there on a revocation. Not only had he been out six times, he was granted regular parole on all six of those times that he was actually released on there. And many times, you know, we have these reports where you have a juvenile victim who's been greatly sexually assaulted. In this case, an 8-year-old female, and many times as a result of the plea agreement, just to not send that young child through the rigors of wars of what goes on in courts and the psychological problems that she has had and continue to have as a result of being so brutally sexually assaulted, those charges are dismissed, and to prevent her from having to go through that whole experience of testifying. But clearly he was charged with the burglary of that residence. He was charged with that burglary, and he pled guilty to the burglary of that residence. He just didn't admit to the sexual assault. He was charged with the burglary of the second residence, in which why he received the 215 years to life sentence on the burglary charges. I do not think that Mr. Fulham is in the best interest of the community to be released back out to the community, taking that he has been on parole and revoked six times that he was out. He had his freedom. He was out. He had the opportunity. And each time that he was out, he doesn't really take fault for, you know, having to be revoked. He just talks about other problems that have. He said that he got saved while he was in prison, and he got out. He started to follow the right path, but Even after doing that, he was rubbing, we voted on three more times that he was actually actually revoked. I think that Mr. Fallon is very well spoken and very manipulative in his talking, but I think, you know, based on the fact and the information that we have, at least that I have read, that I just do not see him, the community being safe, and I don't see anything that says that if he was released, he would not be out committing more crimes. So I do definitely think that it is not in the best interest of him being released at this time, and the crimes that were the sexual assault on the 8-year-old female were horrible crimes, and according to the pre-sentence report, that young lady suffered some very reality and psychological problems, and she's probably still going through those same problems. So in my opinion, I am not in favor of granting Mr. Fallon either regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. I'm not going to direct the list to the rest of the board.
Mr. Johnson, I do appreciate his behavior in prison. He's got a good discipline record, and he's willing to program. But I would just point out for the record that, you know, we had a little conversation with him about how it's a problem in halfway houses, and yet his plan is to go to a halfway house. So I'm kind of seeing a little irony there. And I'd just also point out for the record that Maricopa County strongly opposes any sort of release.
Any more comments? Therefore, I am going to, and I'm going to do this all in one, I am going to make a motion to deny Mr. Fallon regular parole, home arrest, absolute discharge. I'm going to state the reason for that is that it was a serious and violent offense, serious and deep offense, being the age of the victim. I'm also going to mark age of the victim. I'm going to mark serious bodily injury because of the physical assault to the victim. I'm also going to mark put multiple victims in there because there was a second burglary that occurred within an hour within the same neighborhood. It just so happened that a neighbor happened to see it. I mean, he was on previous probation, but at the time this has still occurred. Mark prior criminal history, repeat offender. I'm also mark history of assault to the behavior. I'm going to mark needs closer supervision. I'm going to also mark lack of program because he just denies being involved in the second, the original assault, but he really hasn't talked more about how to deal with the psychological problems that he's having. He does have a release plan. He doesn't have good demeanor. There was very little or no family support. I'm going to mark that. Those are going to be my reason because this incident occurred prior to 1984. We cannot do a parole set off on this incident. That is going to be my motions and my reasons for the denial.
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Fowler, the board have voted to deny your parole at this time, sir. You have been denied home arrest, absolute discharge, and regular parole at this time, sir. I do want to thank you for taking the opportunity and time for appearing before this board. That is going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir.
Thank you, and peace be with you.
You too, sir.